Hey, it's Millie, and welcome to the Generalist World podcast. This is a show where I interview people from the Generalist World community, and we talk things like the future of work, careers, predictions, their hot takes, and really understand what their squealy careers have looked like. So if you're a generalist who feels like they're living in a specialized world, this is the podcast for you.
And we are live. We've got Karina in the studio. Thank you so much for coming on such short notice. I DM'd you yesterday and I was like, hey, you want to come on the GW pod? And you said, yes. So welcome.
Well, we haven't chatted in a while, so it's an opportunity to chat. And luckily, I've been very, my word for 2026 is discernment. So I've been very selective on what gets on my calendar, and you made the cut, so...
I'm honored. So, Karina, for folks who maybe have not met you before or haven't come across you, can you give us a flavor of the directions that this podcast might go, some of the threads we might pull on? Why should someone tune in and listen up for the next 30 minutes or so?
Sure. So I wear many hats. I'm the founder of Fractionals United, which is a large global community for current and aspiring fractional leaders. I still do some fractional COO work myself. Say that 10 times quickly, fractional COO. I'm a workflow consultant, community builder, do dramatic improv on the side, love to read, learn, productivity junkie. I can keep going.
I love it. I think you probably never want to answer this question again, but I think it's important that we get it really, really clear at the beginning. What is a fractional? What does fractional mean?
I don't mind answering that, honestly. It is a senior embedded leader. So it's not synonymous with part-time or consulting. It's literally, if you think about a COO, for instance, the only difference between a COO and myself is I do it part-time and I can be doing it for more than one company at a time or doing other things on the side. But the COO part is the same. So you're still part of the team with people reporting to you, with accountability, seat at the, on the table and the org chart, all of that.
And so if I was someone that's working in a full-time role right now and I'm thinking, oh, well, that sounds kind of flexible and fun and cool, what is the first kind of step or the big steps that I could kind of take today to land myself a fractional role this month, next month?
So unfortunately, it's hard to get. So if you're still in a full-time role, you're lucky, and start planting the seeds now. And just feel out your network. There are more people looking for work than there are roles. It's still a new evolving, depending where you are and what, industry and what function. It is hard. It's very referral and network based right now. It's very misunderstood, which is why I don't mind defining it. So it's not easy. It can take 3 months if you're lucky to find that first role. Many people go 6 to 9 months plus. So if you're still working, start planting the seeds, let your network confidentially know, that this is something you're thinking about. If they hear of anything, if they know of anyone, also consider other part-time work, other consulting project work, right? We all have bills to pay. And part of the benefit of being fractional or part-time is you can do more than one thing. We are all so many things, right? Hello generalists, we love many things, right? So this plays into that. You don't have to define yourself any longer with one thing or one title or one role.
I think that's actually a really, really helpful framing. I think often it can be like, quit your job, it's going to be easy, just go and get it. I think it's really helpful to add an element of realism of actually this can be really, really difficult as well, or perhaps budget that it's going to take a bit longer than you think. Maybe that's a better framing.
One thing people don't talk about is that you're going to be your own boss, which is good and bad. But no one's going to give you paid time off or pay your taxes or do any of that. So you, depending on what country you are, right? You have to know what the rules are to work for yourself and what that entails. Like in the US, you should incorporate and you should have a separate bank account and probably an accountant, so you have to think about the fact that you are going into business, even though you're still going to have clients and work embedded in companies, you will always have to run your company and pay your taxes and juggle all of that. And it's not going to be this like nice 9-to-5 where you have benefits and pay time off. Anything you want like that, you're going to have to pay for the benefits. You're going to have to like build in time off. So it's not for everyone.
And you have a very unique vantage point because you are the founder of Fractionals United. How many members do you have now? I can't keep up.
We used to be free. We started free and we were free for 2+ years. And then back in May, I made the difficult decision to monetize just because I hadn't paid myself in 2 years and I have a team and resources, and it got to the point where I was starting to resent all the time, and that's just not good for anyone. Like, this is something I believe in. This is something I want to be sustainable and long-term, so I needed to treat it as such and be able to pay myself and not pay for everything out of my own pocket, especially since, you know, my husband then got let go. So it was just like, it's a hard time out there. Like, I need to treat this like a business. So before we transitioned, we had gotten to 15,000 members. Right now we are almost at 1,700. So we lost more than I had hoped for, but people are coming back. New people are rejoining. And, you know, we are also being very much more explicit about what we are and are not. We are community first and foremost. You're looking for leads. We are not the place for you. There's this wonderful word that I discovered recently called net weaving.
Okay, say more.
So unlike networking, net weaving is a give first mentality where you just show up to give, you know, to make connections. What community is truly about. Generalist world is totally based on this principle too. So people who get that, right, who show up because they want to make connections, they want to find their tribe, they want to be part of something. And they know, you know, that can lead to work, but you're not there for the work. You're there for the learning and the collaborating and the connecting first and foremost. So we are very explicit about this because I don't need people to join and then be unhappy because they're there for the wrong reasons.
Yes, being... so true. You're not for everyone. We're not for everyone. And being really clear and upfront about that is actually the kind and respectful thing to do. I know that you call yourself, I think, an accidental community builder. It's, I mean, you've got an incredible background. I'm just going to read this out, from being a teacher to a publishing exec to a personal trainer, back to publishing, then into freelance, then into fractional work, and accidentally a community founder. What a journey. Number one, generalist 101. Variety is the spice of life. And I am so curious because I'm also an accidental community builder. These communities emerged. It was almost like they just needed to exist, and we happened to be the ones who were just spotted this gap and said, right, I'll take this risk and I will do it. If there is someone who is listening to this who is thinking that they can see a gap and they're maybe in the position that we were in a few years ago, is there anything now that you're a few years on, looking back, that you might tell that person?
So the first thing is, don't start free. It nearly broke my heart to deactivate like what felt like 2+ years, you know, of members and work. It was the right thing to do and I don't regret it. But human psychology is really weird. I literally have had people tell me that it's not about the value, but they refuse to pay for something that was free.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the freemium thing doesn't work. It does not work. Like, you don't have to be expensive. We're not expensive. We're $10 a month, you know? You don't have to be expensive. And it's okay to, you know, like, if you're just starting out, it's okay to have an MVP, right? Where, like, the understanding, and I've done that a couple of times where, you know, okay, let's see if there is something here, help me build it. You know, you get the 30 days free, but with the understanding that the end of the 30 days, if this still exists and we've decided this is a real thing, you will be charged X, right? So that you go in with that expectation that this is real. And people do respect what they pay for. Like, there, it definitely is something. You know what I mean? Like, we had free trials. We got away with the free trials. you know, like if it's free, people join, they don't pay attention, and they're like, oh, I never got anything out of it. Did you actually show up? Did you pay attention? Or because it's free, you're just like, eh, if I get around to it and move on. So number one, don't start free. You can MVP and have like a beta, you know, or whatever, but set the expectation. Two, build it for yourself and keep it simple. You know, like very simple. Like choose a tool you're going to use and others are going to want to use, which is why we're both in Slack, right? We live in Slack. I refuse to go anywhere else. Make onboarding easy. Make referring others easy. You know, see what works. Listen to your members, right? See what works. See what resonates and double down on that. And do not try to be everything for everyone. For the love of God, find your lane, double down on it.
It's really sound advice. And I mean, we could do an entire, probably half day, full day just on community building. So maybe if you guys want to hear that, let us know. We'll come back and we'll do a marathon on community building. But there are so many threads I want to pull while I've got your brain here. And one of them is around the strengths-based movement. Yes. I'm curious, what does that mean to you and why should someone care about it?
So I think I've probably read most of what he wrote. Marcus Buckingham was one of the original authors. I don't think he's the only one, and I don't know if he even does this anymore. But I had read all his book Once Upon a Time, and it really resonated because it's the principle of figure out what you're good at. And like I said, double down on it, right? Back to like find your focus, right? Find your lane. We used to, growing up, I think many of us, or at least I was, encouraged to like get better at the thing I wasn't good at. But if you think about it from efficiency and effectiveness, you're always going to be more effective at the thing that comes naturally. And it also, 9 out of 10 times, is something you enjoy more than beating your head against the wall trying to do the thing that you just cannot. Like, for instance, I will never be a salesperson. I'm an introvert. Selling is hard. I will never be as good as, like, I've seen salespeople. They just exude joy. They love talking to people. This is what they're meant to do. I think in systems, like give me something to tweak or build or automate. And I'm like, ooh, toy, fun. Let me play. So the strength-based movement is all about like lean into your strengths. Do the things that you are inherently good at and that you enjoy. And then partner with others good at the things you aren't.
So true. And I don't know where the flip side of that, like the other side of the coin came from, where it's like, you know, really hammer in and dig your heels in and improve what you're not good at. I love that from an efficiency standpoint, it makes sense to double down on the things that you're excellent at. I want to pull on one thing I've heard you say a few times, which is stay in your lane, which is an interesting framing because often I associate that with almost this like specialist or don't veer, pick one thing, stay in it. And so how does that tension sit for you of finding your focus, staying in your lane, and being a generalist and wearing all these different hats? Like, how does that all land for you?
Well, I guess the lane is what I choose it to be, right? It's what's working at different points in my life. Optimize used to be my favorite word. My new favorite word is right size. And it so happens to be part of my brand, Right Size COO. But that's just, I think, you know, that's a nice accident also. But I optimize assumes there is, or sounds more like there's one solution, but I'm realizing that productivity looks different in different roles and times in your life, you know? And I think that's applicable to so many things, including what is your lane? My lane has been all over the map and changes as my needs and perspective and even my strengths. Like I used to be a publishing production editor. And I prided myself on having this like amazing attention to detail. I've told my team, like, I can do it if you need me to, but I no longer have that attention to detail because it's like a muscle. You either use it or lose it. And I've lost it because I've had to be at more strategic levels for so long that I no longer have that skill set, nor do I enjoy it anymore. So your lane can change.
And I think that's exactly it, where I think there's this kind of, societal belief that a generalist, it's like, it's ironically putting generalists into a box where it's like, oh, they can't change, you know, you don't have any lane, you don't have any focus, you're scattered. Where I realized that my career, it's not so much been squiggly, but it's been like spiky. I will go through, I will deep dive. Like right now, I'm specializing in community building. I'm specializing in content. That was not the case 3 years ago. 3 years ago, I was not a community builder. I had never posted on anything like professionally in my life. And in 3 years from now, will those still be the spikes? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe they continue. Maybe I, who knows what I am the first to say. I don't know what's going to happen in 3 years' time.
In a year, forget about three.
Exactly. In a year, for sure. And so I think there can be like threads that you tie through all of your career. But I think it's a really helpful call out that you can be in a lane. Generalists and specialists can find their lane, but a generalist will often have, they have an indicator, let's say. You can switch lanes and you're more agile. You're more agile to be able to switch lanes.
I do think that there are common threads that we may only see in hindsight. Like in the early days of Frun, which we abbreviate Fractionals United to FRUN, because only after I bought the domain did my husband point out the unfortunate acronym, FU.
Oh.
People have told me to lean into it, and I'm like, that is just not me. It is just not me. So we go by FRUN. We're fun. We're FRUN, right? Whatever. So in the early days of FRUN, I used to say that it's my first time running a community or building a community. And then I realized at some point that's actually not true. I used to run meetups all the time, you know, and I actually had started this Woman Career Changers little network earlier on, you know. So they may not have been community at the scale of FRUN, but they were little communities, you know what I mean? So It's funny that there are threads that you may not recognize till after the fact.
I completely resonate with that, where Generalist World is, you know, on paper, the first community I've built. And I had 7 years of taking people on tours, these groups of, you know, 10 to 30 people. And I would take them on tours around Europe and Asia for 1 week to 2 weeks at a time. And we were little communities. It was completely community building, just in person, and I hadn't really made that connection. It's that beautiful saying of you can only connect the dots looking backwards. So Karina, from your perspective, what do you see coming? Like, we're in kind of a topsy-turvy place in the world. Let's stick to the world of work for this topic. It just feels like there is so much change. Everyone has opinion. I'm not sure if you're feeling it, but there's an element of fear, and there's an element of uncertainty. From your perspective, from your vantage point as this community builder, as a fractional operator, what do you see coming and what are you doing to prepare?
So, of course, we have to mention AI, right? Because everything is AI. And so as a workflow consultant, I've done automations for years and I love automations and automate everything and anything I could. And I jokingly say any day I can automate one more thing is a good day. So I am 100% in on automation. I get really annoyed that people talk about AI as if it were automation or something, like, as in like, oh, with AI, I can automate this. No, you could have automated it before, but maybe now you can do it more directly. And honestly, personally, I'm still using the Zapiers and Makes and Relays with AI modules rather than AI agents, because AI agents are not reliable or sometimes even safe. But AI is here to stay and will continue, so ignoring it is asking to be left behind. There are people going crazy extremes. Like, there was a founder I had an interview with a month or two ago that was hiring a fractional COO to babysit a team of agents.
Wow, we're there.
I don't think it, I think, you know, there's going to be repercussions and people are going to have things fall apart and then be struggling to like rebuild with human beings a little bit more in the mix. But yes, there are people trying to take it to the extreme. I think we still need our human creativity, our human oversight. We still are necessary. The other side of it is, because of this, I think unless you're working for a large company, there will be more and more 1099 that or contract or part-time or whatever you want to call it, depending on what country you're in. So the portfolio careers, the doing more than one thing, having more than one income stream is going to become more and more important, which has both good and bad, right? You know, some who, as we talked about, are more inclined to stay employed and not do it for themselves are going to have a harder time, unless they're lucky and have a stable job in a large company. And even those are not so stable anymore.
Yeah, that is completely what we're seeing. I'd love to go just back to the interview, not specifically that one, but I'm wondering if there are a lot of folks interviewing at the moment, and perhaps some of them are pivoting from, you know, one role to another or from one industry to another. I'm just curious if there's anything that stands out to you from the interviews that you've done in, say, the past year that seem like it's really working. Basically, tips, things that are really working in pitching or positioning yourself for a new role.
So I will be honest in that I haven't been doing as many because I've been mostly focused on fun. And after being a founder for 3 years, I'm being a lot more selective on, like, you know, the non-founder or non-boss roles I'm even considering because I have less patience. Like, just the idea of having to deal with a CEO's analysis paralysis and indecisiveness makes me want to, like, just bash my skull in. So I'm being very, very selective. That said, I do, you know, I have had some, and I obviously see the conversations in front. And A, it is harder out there. The economy is also hard, and small businesses are struggling. So many are trying to get by with less and more AI and agents and others to help. Even my husband, who's a senior developer, you know, was struggling because they don't want to pay for developers because they think vibe coding will do it. You know what I mean? So I think it's just a really hard time out there regardless. And what makes the difference is having a strong referral network and community who can vouch for you, because warm leads and intros, you know, make a big difference. Being really clear on what it is that you can help with. And unfortunately, having an ROI so that, you know, if you are senior and experienced and don't want to make peanuts because you're worth more, there needs to be ROI for the business so that they can afford you.
Yeah. Unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at it, it's just like objectively, if you can tie this to a business outcome, it's going to be a much easier sell. Yep. And plus one on the referral network. And it's like that, what do they call it? The hidden job market, yeah. Where there's so many of the jobs that are actually available are not posted. They are happening inside communities like Front. They're happening inside communities like Generalist World. They're happening in the DMs. Yes. It's like, hey, does anyone know of this person? I'm so curious of what the next kind of 3 to 5 years are going to look like, for example, for job descriptions. Oh. Like, what is going to happen? How's that going to shake out?
I think the current interview process is so broken. And now, like, people are using AI to generate resumes and cover letters. And then AI, the other side is using AI to determine if AI was used. It's like, this sounds like a sci-fi thriller, you know? It's like, it's going to blow up.
A bad one.
Yeah, very bad one.
Awful plot, terrible. I know that you mentioned it at the beginning, was around dramatic improv, which I would love to spend some time on, because that, you know, perhaps I'm curious, does it, and if so, how does that affect you at work and in your career?
First off, I fell into this pre-COVID, like a good few years pre-COVID, took a break and came back to it, because for me personally, It is the creative reset and recharge, and nothing else does. And yes, I'm an introvert and it still works that way. It just does. I'm not me up there. I don't have to prepare and plan. I get up there, make something up with people, and it's in person, not online, right? So it just, for me personally, it does so many good things. And it has absolutely, like, there are books explaining how improv helps you think on your feet, be more collaborative, yes, and all of that. A funny story. So I was the fractional COO of the FRAC conference, and 2 years in a row, I actually spoke. Last year, I was part of the introduction committee, whatever, you know, like the people, not the keynote, but like just the greeters, whatever, you know, and I improvised on the spot what I was going to say. And somebody I know from the community, and he's actually also the executive director of the FLA, afterwards, he's like, "You're an introvert? I didn't expect you to be able to speak." And I'm like, "Yeah, it's the improv."
Which is such an important skill, because really what we're talking about here is communication. And being able to communicate on the spot, in any situation, under pressure, such an important skill.
And it's also a lot of fun. Like, anyone listening, like, they're one of... So the two things that me personally finds exhilarating, one, there are no mistakes. The whole concept of improv is everything is a gift, and you take it and you add to it and make something together from it. So there are no mistakes, literally. And two, there is no prep. There is no homework. I spent all of my professional career planning and preparing. All you do is show up. That's it. Show up and just be present. It's so liberating. Oh my gosh. And you know the thing we as adults have to learn about thinking twice? In improv, you get to blurt out the thing you're thinking, and it's a good thing because it takes you interesting places.
Amazing. There's something like, I don't know if you feel this as well, but I think particularly when you're working in tech, online, digital careers, it can be kind of like void of creativity. And I've realized, and it sounds to me like this is an absolute creative act, and you're like building this creative, you're building the creative muscle, and it's a creative expression. And I can really resonate. I think it's like, yeah, when we work online and it can be very like productivity focus and optimizing focus and like output focus, it's like, where is the space in our world and in our lives for this purely beautiful, joyful, creative energy and creative act? And for me, this has shown up recently. Last year, I started writing a book, and it was a book for and about, and it was all my lessons from building Generalist World. And then I took a break over the holidays and I went completely offline. I went like dark. I went off grid and I came back and I read the book and I was like, that's trash. It's not trash, but I was like, it's not me. It was, I could feel it was void of the creative milliness. And actually, it coincided with a call that I had with Nikita, who used to work with us at Generalist World, who's one of my best friends. And we just nerd out on all things writing and creativity and books. It's like, it's our shared love language. And after that call, I was completely inspired to be like, okay, Millie, try not for 1 second to do what you think you should do and write this nonfiction professional, like, business career guide. I was like, what do you want to write? What are you like, what does your heart want to write? And I sat down, it was a Sunday morning, and I spent the next 5 hours. I didn't pee, I didn't eat, I didn't take a sip of water, just like blah, 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 creating this world. And what emerged was like, there was a story, and it's essentially a parable. And it's a fictional story, which is going, it's all the things that I was saying in the book in what I think was kind of a boring-ish way as a fictional story. And it's like been the most fun I have had creatively in like years.
That's amazing.
And there's, it reminded me, because when you were saying, you know, there's, you don't prep. That's how I feel about the book. Like, it feels like I'm following my fingers. My fingers are like typing and I'm just like trying to catch up and keep up with them.
So the part that I guess I should touch on is the dramatic. So I realized I took all the comedic improv classes, and I'm in New York, which makes it easy. And there are some really great schools here that I did the entire program. But somewhere along the way, I realized I'm not funny. I don't want to try to be funny. And I discovered that dramatic improv was a thing. It's just basically an improvised one-act play. And it's awesome because I love, oh my God, like I love getting up there and doing emotional, cathartic, put it all out there scenes.
This sounds incredible. Maybe I'm coming to New York. Maybe we should go to a class or do maybe even do like a community thing. I don't know. Sure. Get our communities together, do some kind of fun improv. Edja will be so down for this. She'll be so keen. Oh, this has been a blast. I'm wondering, Karina, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you're like, oh, I really wish I had a chance to speak about this while I had the mic and folks are tuning in? Is there anything else you would like to say?
Well, community is important, and I think going to stay more, get more important. And community does not equal network or marketplace or, you know, your followers. Community is a two-way thing. So a place like Generalist World or Fractionals United or, you know, Operations Nation or many of the others out there that really are like finding your tribe are really important. And if you find it, value it.
Absolutely. And I love the giving more than you take, because if everyone is doing that, the community is guaranteed to just continue and keep getting bigger and keep getting better. I wonder if we could touch on like what is it like being part of GW for you, particularly you've got your fractional hat, you've got your community building hat, like what drew you to GW and how has that been for you?
So I had heard about GW, I think a while before I joined, and then I joined Rosieland because when I started Fred, like the first thing I'm like, okay, I have no idea what I'm doing. What do I do? So I talked to some of the community managers of communities, and Rosieland kept coming up, and you're a member. And I'm like, okay, now I have to join Generalist World because Millie is a person now that I know and like.
Oh, that's actually such an interesting and valid point. It's like, I think when you're starting something new, that could be a new career, a new pivot, a new role, getting in the community of that role or of that thing is such a hack. It's like, if you want to be a fractional operator, go to front. Like that's where you're not going to get the LLM answers. You're going to get the people, the real people, the genuine. You're going to be able to get on a call with them. You're going to be able to see their face. And so it's such a shortcut.
Yeah, absolutely. And I may not be as active as I want to be, and because I run my own community, but I pop in often.
I feel you. And it's hard, right? I think there's only so much bandwidth we have in the world. And I think, you know, to tie it all back right to the beginning around discernment, yes. Be selective. Be selective about what's going on your calendar. Be selective about what communities you're joining. More doesn't equal better. I think if you're a part of one or two, maybe three max, and you're actually contributing, you are actually a giving and receiving member of them, that's enough.
Absolutely. Less is more.
Less is more. Well, Karina, thank you so much for joining the GW podcast. Can't wait to share this with the world, and have a great day.
Thank you for having me.